Hello! Welcome to Movie Banter.
I'm John Sands.
I'm Paul Carenza.
No Jenny.
No Jenny.
Nah,
she's...
locked in a basement.
Is she?
Yeah. Oh, I don't know where. I don't know which basement. She didn't say. She's got a text.
We'll never know.
Locked in basement, please help. But really? She didn't say, so
well,
yeah.
So, yeah.
I'll reply to her eventually.
So exactly. Sorry. She'll be fine.
She'll get the idea.
She's got a phone. welcome to the show. Welcome to the episode. Episode...
yeah, 93?
Something like that. Lots.
I think
plenty.
It'll be 93.
Far too many.
We lose count. We can't really count that high.
Speaking of far too many films to get through this week.
That's true.
Including Chalet Girl and Sucker Punch and Arthur and Meek's Cutoff. And
five. See, I wrote it as Five Fast Five Fury Five because,
I'll let you
because I know one. Because I feel it should be called that because of Too Fast, Too Furious, and then but then they changed it all to like Tokyo Drift, and then Fast and Furious.
It's very convenient.
And then Fast Five in America, but here it's Fast and Furious Five.
Right.
I don't know why.
By the way,
I prefer Fast Five as a title. It's the fifth
one. Fast Furious series.
Yes.
Yes.
So something is fast and something is furious times five.
And it's happened five times.
Yes.
Yeah. Wow. It's one of the rare quintilogies.
Yeah. Well, it's a tricky one. It's a tricky one to find because they're normally, by the time you get to that, it just becomes a big franchise. Like the Bond films were never numbered.
Yeah.
And I can't think of that many films that have had five entries. And especially that still include the and especially which include the number five in the title because normally by that point they're just trying to pretend it's not.
Very true.
Yeah.
Number Johnny Five.
No. So yeah, but I think it's a testament to it. Although it may be the wrong word that it's lasted for five films.
Well, should you want to just launch straight into it? For it.
Because I've seen this because I like mindless action films. And where there's a slight shift, and it was started with the last one, and it's continued in this one. They've moved it out of the range of just, hey, it's men driving, you know, competing in street racing. Kind of the first one was all about that.
Mm.
And so was the second one, to be honest, just in a different place. The third one moved street racing to Tokyo and put drifting in. And the fourth one, I think, was kind of drug running.
Right.
And it's like, you know, yes, there's a bit of street racing to get cars, but then you need to, it's just mainly car chases. And now this one, there's minimal street racing at all, and it's more just, we are big action men who are driving cars and shooting people.
Yeah.
And as a result, I think it sort of livens everything up a bit. It rejuvenates the franchise slightly, because they're not hampered by, right, we've got to throw in a street race, and we've got to have neon under the cars, and women in tight clothing. Although there is also women in tight clothing, and bless them for that. And even there's one incident, well, there's one street race between four of the main people, when they just happen to... They've just stolen some cars and are all just at lights and they're kind of thinking, let's have a quick competition just between us. They just go for it and that's quite entertaining. And the main street race, they just say, well, it's not really ruining it because there's nothing happens to ruin. Where they need to get a car. And they say, right, we need a fast car. So they go to a local street race and everyone's there in tiny clothes and loud music and you think, right, this is going to be the obligatory race someone for a car. And they face off against someone and say, right, we're going to race you for your car. Yeah, you think you can take me? Brilliant. And it just cuts to them pulling back into their warehouse with the fast car, just going, right, we won that, brilliant, let's get on with it. Right. And we don't even see the street race, which I feel is them kind of making a point, just saying, right, we're beyond this now.
Yeah, it's a nod, isn't it?
Yeah.
So
now it's fallen into, not even generic action movie franchise, but it is now an action movie franchise, and works well for it, I think. So, I mean, it's not going to win any Oscars, and if you're not particularly enamoured by the trailer,
it's meant to, really, is it?
No, I mean it's not, but it's. I mean, it's done brilliantly at the American box office, and I think well here, and it's getting extremely good reviews. I think Rotten Tomatoes, like, it was about 80-something%, because if you take it for what it is, it's a very good example of it. It's quite well directed, it's well paced, it's not short. It's over 2 hours, which is surprising, but it kind of rolls along, and it all makes sense, and you're interested, and you know. I think most of the characters in it are in one of the previous four films.
Right.
But there's kind of an eclectic mix, because Vin Diesel wasn't in two or three, except for a cameo at the end of two, or in three. And then so there's a Japanese guy who was in three, but the main guy from three isn't involved. And then some people from four, and they sort of all come back together with a couple of new people, and then just want to rob a bank, but it's all corrupt drug money, so it's fine. So they're still kind of good guys, but on the wrong side of the law.
Caper.
Yeah.
It sounds like a caper film.
It pretty much is. It's sort of, it's not quite, I think one review said it could have been a slightly repurposed script from the potential Brazilian Job, which was the Italian Job sequel, which may or may not ever happen, because it's all set in Rio, and it could sort of be that.
I don't know whether the Brazilian Job will ever happen, because Michael Caine's getting a bit on a bit.
Well, that is true.
Noel Coward's no longer with us.
No. So, it wouldn't be the same, really.
There's a few of the cast left.
Yeah. No, I heard Mark Wahlberg was going to play Noel Coward.
What?
Part.
What? Wahlberg?
How dare
he? Coward, Wahlberg?
No. But it could work. But ultimately, it's just a good action film. So if you want a good action film, you could do a lot worse than this.
So it sounds like then that Fast 6, Fury 6...
Yes, that could
is on its
way. I think 6 and 7 are apparently theorised.
Fast 7, Fury 7.
Yeah. Although it'll be interesting, because it's nothing plot twist, but the whole point of this film is that they sort of want to make one big final job, and then they can all retire with their millions.
Right.
And, you know, it's a film, so I'll leave you to just guess how it ends.
Yeah.
But given that, it's kind of like, what's... Oh, actually, no, remembering, after the credits, there is a bit which kind of sows the seed for what may drive forward the plot of Fast 6. So which wouldn't be money-based. It may just be a sort of, oh, what's going on thing. Yeah.
Just doing an impression of Fast 6.
Yes. Oh, well, actually, I must also mention The Rock, who is a new addition.
I thought you'd been in it before. I mean, I've never seen any of them, so I wouldn't have a clue. But...
No, I mean, to be honest, it seems like the sort of franchise that where The Rock would have been in them.
Would be.
Yes.
Yeah.
But no, he plays an FBI hunter who sort of gets airdropped into Brazil to hunt them all down, really.
Right.
And is also a very good character, because he's very driven. He doesn't really care whether they're good or bad. He basically says, your names came on my desk, I'm going to bring you in. That's my job. And so he's probably a seed being sown for Fast 6 as well, because he'll still be after them. Because they're still wanted in America for a variety of things. So, yeah, it's. I enjoyed it.
It sounds a bit like your Expendables sort of thing, but,
yeah,
but a decade or two younger.
Yeah, it's a slightly younger cast. It's a slightly, because they're not all, I mean, Vin Diesel and The Rock are both huge. Paul Walker is kind of your more lean running type. And the rest aren't really action people as such. You've kind of got your geek and your techie guy and your couple of hot women thrown
in. You stake them in it?
No.
It sounds like his sort of film, I would expect.
Except he's a bit too cockney for it. It's more your slightly Americanized.
Nicolas Cage, he should be in my
Yeah, well, he did Drive Angry, of course. Yeah, overlap.
He's
market.
He's for Drive Angry 6 and Drive Angry 7, isn't he? Yeah.
Yeah, but it's very likable. I think because, actually, there's a very good, because what Marvel are doing with the Avengers is, you know, they're doing various individual superhero films, sowing a few seeds, and then they all tie together. And someone pointed out that Fast 5 is basically this. It's sort of been under the radar a bit and maybe accidental, but they've had four previous films introducing a few characters and you sort of know what they're all like now.
Okay,
and then in this, they suddenly go, right, we're doing one big heist, get everyone involved.
Yeah.
You already know roughly what everyone's like, and if not, there's sort of a quick recap and you sort of know who's the tech guy and who's a good driver and what their motivations are. And then you just have this big film where you don't need to do the groundwork because it's already done.
Mm.
And then you bring in a couple of new people as well and let them loose.
Yeah.
And the end result is just extremely watchable.
Oh, good.
So, ultimately, well done.
What's
if they make a sixth one, great.
What's the order then, in terms of...
quality-wise?
Quality-wise, I have to rank them.
Oh, I need to remember them all. Separating them is quite difficult, because they are quite similar. But then some people are that with Bond films, and those people are wrong. Probably, I mean, the first one is probably still the best, maybe. Although, actually, I did really enjoy this one. Right. So maybe one or five, maybe.
Ooh.
And then four.
Right.
Then two, then three.
Okay.
But three.
One,
three is not...
5, 4, 2, 3. Is that right?
Cool. Or maybe 5, 1, 4, 2, 3.
I'd like to see them go through gears in that order in the next Fast and Furious film.
Oh, they frequently do.
Is that right?
Yeah. And then a shot of nitrous just to spice things up a bit. Yeah. But even three... Well, so the guy I went to see it with, my old flatmate, we have similar mindsets of liking mindless action films. In that, if you're... of a mind to go and see, I mean, if you took someone who only ever watches highbrow films and showed them any of them, they'd hate them all. But if you can differentiate between good and bad action films, there's no real bad one in the franchise.
Okay.
Three sort of stands slightly separate because it had a different leading man, it was all change. But the basic gist is still there, it's still half in. So it's not, three isn't terrible at all. So it's remarkably consistent franchise,
okay,
I think. So, yeah, it's worth a watch if you're of a mood for a film like this. It's a well-done example of the genre.
Yeah, good.
Yeah.
I'm curious to know, then, you mentioned you saw that with your old flatmate, who is male.
Yes.
Now, I know that you didn't see the next film with Jen. And I wonder if you saw it with your old flatmate, or who indeed you did see it with. Because given that Jen didn't see Chalet Girl, I'm just curious, who did you see on your own?
This is low-budget Swiss porn.
I must, I must go and seek this out.
No, this is lowish budget, British comedy about a Chalet Girl.
Right.
No, I went to see this with another female.
Oh, good. As long as there was a female involved. Preferably a female. Actually, I was going to say preferably a female who's sort of mid-teens, because that seems to be where it's aimed at.
Yeah, I'd cruise around the local schools.
I'd be kind of happy if you didn't go with someone of that age group.
No, I just didn't. I didn't pick up a nearby teenager.
Is that who it's aimed at? It looks like it's aimed at your sort of your teen audience.
Pretty much. I was very put, because I hadn't seen the trailer. I'd just seen a poster, which had two people I didn't recognise on it, which is cynical, but it's kind of how I work.
Yeah.
And the only quote, I think, was from, like, Ms. Magazine, which I think is a teen girl magazine, I'm assuming it is. And the quote was, something like, a brilliant snowmantic comedy.
Nice.
Exactly. And I thought, oh, dear, this is going to be terrible. Then I saw the trailer and kind of thought, actually, it's not going to be brilliant, but it looks vaguely entertaining. And this friend of ours, Caroline, in case you're interested, which will mean nothing to you listeners at home, apologise, but just to avoid Paul's
confusion.
But
there you go. You can judge her.
Exactly. But then she said, oh, I'm really quite keen to see this, so drag me along. And actually, the main girl in it, I did recognise. I can't remember her name now. Emily something. Mm-hmm. But she has been... No, she's younger than that. But I think she's 20-ish. She has been in other things, anyway. And she keeps it all together. Because the basic premise is that she is a... Not even sort of really working class... Not sort of comedically working class girl.
Felicity Jones.
Felicity Jones, that's it. Not Emily. Well, I don't know what I was talking about. But she is someone who is sort of your average girl, essentially, who needs some money, is desperate for work. Her dad, her mum died recently-ish, and her dad is struggling. Dad, played by Bill Bailey, who's very good actually. And so she finds a job as a chalet girl, gets the offer because someone else has to pull out, and she's not the first choice, but all right. And then is thrown into this mix of high upper-class people, having Swiss chalets. The other girls are all similar social standing, looking down on her a bit. And then she turns up, and then she used to be a skateboarder, but then quit after her mum died, and then discovers snowboarding and thinks, oh, I'll try this out. And then there's a competition where you can win loads of money, and then there's a bloke involved who she likes the look of.
It sounds a bit like Dirty Dancing, but up a mountain.
Very, very tenuously, but yes.
No one puts baby in the corner of the valley.
Pretty much. But ultimately, it's just very likable. Bill Nighy is the father who owns the chalet that she's working in, and he's got quite a good. And Brooke Shields is the mother.
Oh, okay.
And Bill Nighy is quite is the tolerant husband, because she's quite highly strung, and he sort of lets her run free, and then occasionally tries to rein her in and just sort of smiles to himself while she's doing things. And then they've got a sort of mix of different children. I don't know if they're all his children or some of hers, and they remarry. And then Felicity Jones falls for one of the sons. And of course, there's trials and tribulations, but might it all work out? Might she win the competition? Who can tell? And it's all entirely predictable fluff, but it's all quite nicely done. And there are genuinely some funny moments, and you end up caring about her and caring. And we follow Bill Bailey back home, sort of trying to cope by himself and finding it quite difficult. It's just quite a sweet, heartwarming film. So it's definitely a rental. Yeah. Don't rush out to a cinema.
The trailer looked quite funny. It looked quite
It's perfect. It knows what it is. It doesn't overplay anything, and as a result, this makes it all it's quite watchable and enjoyable drivel.
Oh, fair play.
So I approve.
Very good. Should we do some emails then?
I think we should.
Let's do some emails. We've had emails from firstly from Catherine A. Lowe.
Yes.
Catherine A. Lowe. Says, I only discovered your podcast 3 days ago and listened to your first two episodes, 90 and 91. Then I downloaded your first 10 episodes. It will take about a year to catch up, but I'm looking forward to doing so. Thank you for the needed distractions and fun discussions during my long car rides. Peace, Catherine A. Lowe. Peace to you as well,
Peace
Catherine.
To you as well. Thank you very much.
And if you've listening from the start, you may not hear this until about 2014 or something.
Well, that's true.
In which case, what's the future like?
Email back and... No, that wouldn't work.
That wouldn't work.
Hang on. Email us now and then tell us what it will... No, that won't work either, is it? Are your long car drives in a DeLorean? Because that would
help
a lot.
That'd be very handy.
That would make... Yeah, then that becomes... It all becomes a moot point.
You never see in... Yeah, they never really... When driving a DeLorean, they never put music on, do they? Or podcasts or...
No. Well, the thing is, with the time circuits where they are, Would you really want a radio right next to them?
That's true.
You're driving on the, oh, I don't want to listen to this, and you reach out to flick the station, and suddenly you find yourself in 1740.
I want to hear something from the 60s. I'm in the 60s!
Actually, that'd be the best radio ever.
That'd be very cool, wouldn't it?
Just go and hear them live.
I think we've got a new film here. And we can add this to our work in progress film we're doing.
Oh, yes.
In theory.
Yes.
Which I forgot what was going to happen.
I know, and I think we've
Brian Blessed was in it, and Gerard Butler. But we'll have a time travel car like a DeLorean where you
the radio is directly connected.
Yeah. So you think, I want to listen to some heavy rock, and then you end up...
So in the 80s?
In the Stone Age.
Oh, see.
I don't know. I haven't quite worked it out. Email from Mark Loveday as well. Mark Loveday. Hello, Mark Loveday. Speaking of your Fast 5, Fast Fury 5.
Yes.
He was talking about Drive Angry 3D. The classic literature reference, Mark says. Nicolas Cage's character is called John Milton, vis-a-vis Paradise Lost.
Mm-hmm.
I bet the word vis-a-vis never came up in the Drive Angry 3D script meetings. Piranha 3D, on the other hand, he said, oh, that is a very, very, very silly movie. Drive Angry is a much better silly movie. So there you go.
Yes.
Both silly,
enough.
But good silly.
They are.
Bad,
you quite liked Piranha 3D,
quite liked
didn't
Piranha
you?
3D, yeah. But only in a silly way.
In an ironic, yeah.
It was very silly.
They are making a sequel to Piranha 3D.
Really?
Yes. And do you know what it's going to be called?
Piranha 4D?
You see, you'd assume 4. No, they're calling it Piranha 3DD.
Nice!
Which I think, see what they did I think there. That immediately marks it down as the sort of film
oh,
it is.
Oh, dear.
And yeah, that's well played them, I think.
Oh, dear. Well, Kelly Brook come back into it. Maybe. Oh. No spoilers here, but...
I think you just have.
Maybe she's... Because she, at the end of it, she went off to... To Spain.
She went to live in a field. Exactly. Live on a farm.
Live on a farm.
Where she could run around.
Exactly.
Run around and play with all the other Kelly Brooks.
Pretty much.
She had a great time.
Pretty much.
what a field that would be.
I have to get
a
Jordan or something instead.
Kelly Brooks, identical twin.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Something like that. Martin, now, are we going to go for McGowan?
McGowan?
McGugan?
McGugan?
I mean, no offence, Martin.
Yeah,
but
sorry,
Martin, thank you for
your email. Martin, thank you very much.
Says, I'm curious, can you speak to actors... And their accents. Speak about actors, I'm presuming.
Right.
Or speak to actors about actors.
Well, Jenny's here, so we can't. Yeah.
I'm amazed at how seemingly effortlessly so many Irish, English and even Australian actors appear to be able to mimic an American accent. Do any Americans appear to carry off a British accent as well? And can you speak about specific areas of Welshman or other specific dialects? Do you hear differences in American accents?
Ooh.
It's a whole big area.
It's a whole podcast in itself. I think in films and TV shows, more in films, I think British accents done by American people are normally pretty good. I think because they have enough people training them and they get it right. And so I don't think I've ever seen a film with an appalling English accent. Dick Van Dyke, Mary Poppins.
Oh, but that's lovably awful.
Well, yes.
Lovably awful.
But generally, I mean, like, you know, Gwyneth Paltrow in Sliding Doors and Bridget Jones.
I did see one. Keep talking, and I'm going to find the film.
Fair enough. I'll just space fill.
That I did see. That was awful
but, fair enough. But by and large, they're pretty good. And to our ear, they're like Hugh Laurie in House. That always sounds pretty good to me. So, to my ears, that sounds all right. Australian seems to occasionally come through. I think Sam, I can't remember his name, in Terminator Salvation, occasionally verged into his natural Australian. But I think by and large, they're pretty good. In terms of difference between American accents, I can the big obvious ones. I can your Deep South compared to New York,
New Jersey and Boston. You picked a lot of those sort of things. And the Californian kind of thing.
To a degree. But your smaller regional variations. I mean, it's American like Liverpudlian and Mancunian.
Yeah,
I think they sound quite.
Well, certainly. No, but Americans I know over here. Do seem to comment that compared with maybe the US or other countries, in America, yes, you have got different accents in different parts of the country, but normally separated by 1,000 miles or so.
Yes.
Whereas over here, Liverpool, Manchester, 15, 20 miles away maybe, and yet quite a big difference in the accent, I think.
Actually, yes, and like Birmingham is not that far.
And you can go down the road and there's like a Lancashire accent versus, Yorkshire and Lancashire, very different.
So you've kind of got the American scale of accents, but compressed into the size of Britain.
Pretty much.
Which...
You know, Geordie, you've got your... There's everything. There's so many.
Yeah, I suppose Welsh and Cornish are not that far apart, but completely different accents.
You've got this odd thing. I always thought that there's a farmer's accent, really, isn't there?
Yes.
There's your sort of your Cornish, your kind of, you're my lover, how's it going, sort of West Country. And you go to Norfolk and it's kind of similar.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, you've got your kind of Norfolk accent thing. And yet Norfolk and Cornwall are opposite ends of the country, but both farmland.
Yeah.
And
So I can only work out
that halfway between the two of those is Oxford. And I reckon that once the UK was sort of folded over, and then I haven't quite worked
like
it
some
out.
Sort of British omelette.
Something, yeah, a British omelette.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think that's a real thing.
That sounds good to
but
me.
But it should be.
No, the awfully accented film I did see was called Caffeine, and it had Meenu Suvari in it doing an awful, awful right. English accent, and a few others as well. I can't remember who was playing Brits in this and who were playing Americans, but Breckin Meyer was in it, Catherine Heigl, but there was not a normal English-sounding accent in
yes.
it.
Actually, I did see, I can't think what it was recently, a film with, I think, Stuart Townsend. It was kind of a low-level rom-com, which had Seth Green in it doing it was an all right accent, but it was a little bit overly London. Yeah. And I think he was compensating for not being a British accent by scaling up the Londonness of it.
Yeah.
Mind you, in a recent episode of Bones, they had Saffron Burrows in it. It was kind of a pilot, potential pilot for a spin-off they're doing. So they had Michael Clarke Duncan and Saffron Burrows and someone else all playing sort of the potential cast members of this spin-off. But Saffron Burrows is very English.
Yes.
But she was doing a terrible Cockney accent.
Oh, really?
And it just sounded, very weird.
When it's wrong, you really do notice it, don't you?
So even a Brit doing a bad British accent can sound terrible.
Well, there was the Russell Crowe and the Robin Hood gate last year.
See, that didn't bother me.
I didn't bother you, but a lot of critics, I mean, Mark Lawson from Front Row on Radio 4 actually asked him about it, and he stormed out the interview. And that wasn't particularly good. And the other one I was going to mention was Mike Myers as well. Even though he is he part Scottish, I believe? So, he grew up over here as well. But, you know, there are some times... You never quite know. I think you probably could do a very good English accent if you wanted to.
Mm.
But he always wants to do the exaggerated, the Austin Powers.
Yeah.
Even the guy in Inglourious Basterds was kind of... It kind of stood out a bit, didn't
yes, it? Yes. Slightly too upper.
As a bit too clipped.
But then, when we were going around America, and some people thought we were German.
Yeah, a lot of people
think even English German, accents don't sound like English accents.
No, clearly.
So ultimately, no one knows.
They can't win. But thank you. Good question. Good question. And we shall have more emails another time.
Yes.
But for now, we have three more films to get through very quickly. We have Sucker Punch. We have Arthur. And we have Meek's Cutoff. Yes.
You're saying that a little bit like it. We'll be back after these messages.
After these messages. we'll be doing those after this review of Meek's Cutoff.
Of Meek's Cutoff. Meek's
Cutoff.
I know nothing about this.
Well, it's a film.
Right.
Two words.
First word sounds like
Meek's.
Right.
It's Meek's Cutoff.
You ruined it.
I'm sorry about that. Now, I don't know if I can give a full review, because I actually didn't see all of it.
Right.
Now I know this is a common thing, that because I've got with the Cineworld card thing, you get the unlimited thing.
Yes.
So you see, and if you know, the film doesn't completely grasp you, there is a temptation to think, I'll walk out, because I haven't paid, paid for it anyway. But I saw this... in a cinema, I paid
proper
a tenner.
Paid
for
right.
Paid £10. 10 of my British pounds. And I got about halfway through, and it was Royal Wedding Day as well. And there were street parties going on. I thought, I can't be in here on a day like today. Partly it just bored me. And which is a real shame, because I like the spirit of it, and I like it's an independent film. It's a nice little film. The director is Kelly Reichardt, who did a great little film called Wendy and Lucy a couple of years ago, which was just about a girl and a dog coming to a small town, and the girl's sort of homeless, but then has to leave the dog tied up outside the shop when she goes in, comes out, the dog is arrested for shoplifting, and then the dog gets stuck there, she's at the police station. And that's kind of all that happens, really. She kind of loses the dog because she gets arrested.
Right.
And then it's her trying to get the dog back in the film. A lovely little film, about 90 minutes. Loads and loads of scenes where there's no dialogue.
Mm.
It's just but atmospheric, and you get this nice little atmosphere of this small town. And so Wendy and Lucy, lovely little film.
Yeah.
I thought it really worked for it there. What she's doing here, the director, is trying to put that in a Western. And so 20 minutes and there's no dialogue, pretty much.
Right.
And no hardly any music. And just you see wagon trains going across deserts, and
see, but that can be done. That can be done well if it holds your interest.
I think there's just so much of it where I just thought, someone say something, or someone do something, or you know, I love westerns. I really do like westerns. But then, for me, the spirit of the western, I want a bit of rousing music. I mean, not necessarily saying that's the only way to make a western.
Yeah.
But given that's the history of westerns, you know, your big countries and all those sort of things there. The Searchers, your John Wayne stuff.
Yeah.
Or then you've got your spaghetti westerns, which is kind of changing that a bit. But
at least then, even if it's quite quiet, with no doubt, you've got sort of low tension and
yeah.
build atmosphere building. And if it's just 20 minutes of nothing happening.
I know, and I really wanted to like it, and it's been sort of pitched as a kind of a feminist western, a feminist, and see, that sounds like a product you can buy. So it's kind of pitched as that, and you know, the story was getting going maybe an hour in, but it's just too long. It's too long to wait on your patience, I think. And I really like it. I really hope that she does some other things that I'm going to enjoy.
But this was not one of them.
It just took forever. Just someone say a thing. Someone shoot someone. Come on. You've got guns. You've got horses and guns.
You say that in everything.
I do.
Snow White. Someone shoot someone.
Come on, Chalet Girl. Come on.
Bill Nighy.
So, yeah. No. So Meek's cut off. And unfortunately, I cut it off too soon.
No.
Because I'm Meek.
Or it was too Meek.
Or it was too Meek for me. Maybe so.
Fair enough. So maybe worth a watch if you've got hours to kill.
But from what I gather, the polar opposite of that film.
Yes. Yeah, it's a Sucker Punch. Mm. In terms of nothing happening, it's the complete opposite end of that.
Maybe somewhere in the middle between the two is a normal idea.
Well, yes. This is just a constant visual onslaught, which I was kind of half expecting to not enjoy, because reviews hadn't been great, box office hadn't been great. And so, I think I was almost, in some level, almost hoping for a complete mess of a film. But actually, if you get into the central premise is, there's a, and it's almost dialogue-less, the opening prologue of sorts, is two girls with an ill mother and an evil stepfather, and the mother dies, leaving them money in the will.
Mm.
And the stepfather wants the mother to die, thinking, hey, I'll get everything, then discovers that the girls have got the money. And then events transpire, which essentially, in the first couple of minutes, which leave the main girl, played by Emily Browning, sent to a mental institution by the stepfather.
Sentimental?
Yes, sent to a sentimental institution. Yeah. No, sent to a mental institution. Because...
Well done, you said the magic word.
Yeah. Because the... and the stepfather basically just says, oh no, she's a lunatic, lock her up. And so she gets locked up. And in order to cope in the mental institution, she can... It's unclear. She's either drugged up or has sort of a mental breakdown or something, which causes her to view the whole thing as a sort of, not a boulevard, that's the wrong word I think, boudoir, kind of cat house brothel, essentially, right. With all the girls who are locked up there.
So that's in her head,
yes.
Apparently.
And so,
or in Zack Snyder's head.
Well, yes.
More than likely.
And so basically we see her pretty much getting wheeled into this place, and a quick flash of images, which will make more sense when you see it. And then it suddenly all gets a lot more colourful, and then everyone's talking and it's sort of slightly more reactionary. Mm. But the girls are still prisoners, so they are all essentially prostitutes, but against their will have sort of been taken in,
right.
And have to entertain clients and dance for them and do other things. But it's far more colourful and lively.
Yeah,
yes, but but this isn't portrayed as all the girls say, hey, this is a great life. It's still a terrible life for them all, and they all want to escape. And then have to work out, they form a plan, they have to steal things, certain items, which we've seen as she was coming into the mental institution. And so there's sort of other alternate versions of those things. Mm. So that's sort of layer one of reality, which may sound a bit like Inception, but not quite. And in order to steal these things, Emily Browning then does a dance to distract the men, while one of the other girls goes off and steals one of the things, hopefully unnoticed.
Right.
And then while she's dancing, to sort of take her away from what she's doing.
What are the things they're trying to steal?
Well, we find it, but it's things like, you know, they need fire and...
They're like Horcruxes.
No, it's all normal things like a light. But things like, you know, a lighter and a key and a knife, right. And a map, something like that. But whenever she's dancing, we then sort of go into her head, where she's kind of, I think, essentially imagining what's happening, kind of, but in a weird, completely mental style. So rather than, I mean, going into the bordello, that's the word I was looking for.
Oh, okay.
That is sort of a normal, you think, oh, right, she's just constructing this fake reality. Then, when she's dancing, it turns into, I mean, you get sort of like steampunk trench warfare going on with kind of zombie German, I don't think they are Nazis, not a trench warfare. And they've all the girls who got modern weaponry, but then they're fighting these kind of zombies in a very overly stylized way.
Right.
And then there's another one, to get the fire, they need to fight a dragon, so they get sort of dropped into a castle and fighting off demonic hordes, and then they have to kill a dragon. And it's very hard to describe, but I mean, the trailer sort of does the job,
yeah.
Essentially, showing these visuals which make absolutely no sense, unless
I saw the trailer.
The premise of it. You look unimpressed by the trailer.
Well, the trailer made... I think I tweeted at the time, at Paul Carenza, that I couldn't imagine a film that I would least want to see.
No,
want
fair
to see any less than that. It fair just enough. Looked like everything that didn't make any sort of
that's
sense.
But it does make sense in the context of the film. It's not meant to make... It makes as much sense as it is meant to, if that makes sense. As in, it's clearly portrayed as this is a fantasy she is having, and we're just watching that fantasy, and then we go back to... sort of reality, but you care about the girls and you want them to escape, and there's the evil guy controlling them, and there's a deadline as well, which gets explained in the film. But ultimately it does make sense, and it's a watchable film, and visually it's fascinating, but you need to maybe be willing to trade a bit of plot for brilliant visuals. But they are very interesting visuals. It's a very unique-looking film, and showing things that you haven't seen before and with weird styles. And there's one, I can't think what they're trying to retrieve, but then one of the fantasies is them sort of a helicopter assault on a train. So they sort of drop in and fighting robots on the train that are guarding the thing they're trying to steal. So it's this complete change of style each time, or change of context. But it's... Yeah, I was never bored the whole way. It is kind of the opposite of Meek Sutter. Even though it may not be to everyone's taste, at no point was I bored in the whole thing, because you're being bombarded with interesting visuals the whole way through. And so it certainly won't be to everyone's taste, but I found it very interesting to watch.
I wish I'd seen it, because I really want to rant about it, but I can't because I haven't seen it. I can tell you what other people have said about it.
Fair enough.
Had an email from Richard Berryman. He emailed podcast@moviebanter.co.uk.
And you could too, listener.
He's a smart man.
Well, yes.
And Richard said, saw this for free and I'm glad I did. I like Zack Snyder, but this was a bit overindulgent. Definitely style over substance. Could have done much more with the premise in my
opinion. Yeah, that's probably true. Mm-hmm. I think I would concur.
Martin McGugan emails and says, Sucker Punch. Is it rife with erotica and a homage to anime? Yes. I did, however, find it visually rich and built on a framework that perhaps, while flawed, was still very entertaining.
Yeah, I concur all the time. Yeah, it is overly sexualized. Well, not overly. Well, it depends how your own personal sexual bar, as it were.
sexual bar.
I'd go there for a drink. But I mean, because you've got the women in various levels of skimpy clothing because they're meant to be prostitutes, but still, in terms of... In the film, that kind of makes sense. But when they go into battle, they're dressed similarly, and that's just inefficient.
Yeah.
And again, you know, it's sort of titillation, and it's not over the top, but it's also unnecessary. But also, I'm a bloke, and so I was just thinking, wow, so I'm not going to complain too much.
One review I heard just sort of said Zack Snyder clearly started with the wardrobe department and just said, it's going to look like this, and it's going to look like this. And then people go, what's the story? Ah, it's going to look like this.
Yes. So no, I think that's fair enough.
The thing. Jed emailed in to say, Sucker Punch is more an experiment film, more experiment than a film. And experiment films haven't exactly had a sterling track record. A disparate patchwork that is in constant danger of falling apart. We wanted a cocktail with a kick, but ended up with a plain old fruit punch.
I wouldn't say it's plain old fruit punch. I'd say it's more like a cocktail that has a kick, but, you know, sort of a, not necessarily a kick that you wanted.
A kick ass?
Kind of. I preferred kick ass, to be honest.
A kick A, asterisk, as it would be called everywhere. Yeah, well, fair enough.
It certainly won't be for everyone, and it's... Mm. Yeah, but I did quite like it. But I wouldn't necessarily watch it again and again and again. But it's interesting. I think also one thing it has going for it is that it's completely original, which shouldn't be a big selling point. But at the moment, in the current cinematic landscape, it kind of is. Because it's not based on anything. It's not based on a comic. It's not a spin-off or anything else. It's not based on a book or anything. It's just this completely original idea that he had and churned out. Which... I think should count for something, at least. I think it's a shame it hasn't done better, because it might have encouraged people to take slightly more risks. And also, if it had been... I think it did something like $30 million opening weekend at the box office, and it cost something like $85 million. Okay. So, but throwing in, well, it'll probably make its money back, but it won't be a particular success. And if it had just been a bit cheaper, then it would have... People would have gone, wow, look at this small film that's done really well. And they probably could have made it a bit cheaper as well.
Yeah.
So... Yeah, it's a shame, and it could have been more, but I think it's not a terrible thing.
Well, if anyone has seen Meek's Cutoff and Sucker Punch, then I'd be interested to know.
Yeah, take your pick. Which
I didn't think that either that both films would appeal to the same sort of person.
No, probably not.
In tribute to Sucker Punch, we'll do our Desert Island and Flicks this week.
Oh yes,
films set in Vermont.
Yeah, Because, frankly, it's an eclectic mix this week.
90-odd episodes in, we've run out of things to do Desert Island Flicks about. Yeah. So.
And Wikipedia, that was the main category of...
It's just that we are recalling from our own memory.
That is true, yes. Films that are set in Vermont.
Every time I see a film set in Vermont, I store that away.
Yep.
File under V.
File away.
For films set in Vermont. Yep.
And if for some reason you happen to know that a film we mention being set in Vermont and you know that's wrong, then, well, you must be wrong because we're going from our memories and our memories and are flawless.
Not Wikipedia.
No, definitely not.
No way.
Certainly not Wikipedia.
So, one last film to do before we pretend this never happened. And
which is certainly not set in Vermont.
No, exactly. It's set in.
New York,
is it?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. I haven't seen it.
I wouldn't know. This is Arthur, the remake of Arthur, which was a Dudley Moore film, and this has got Russell Brand in it, who I feel I say this a lot, against my better judgment, I actually quite like. His stand-up I'm not a big fan of, because he's a little bit too cocky, but in films, he's not done all that many films, and he generally comes across as, while sort of cocky and arrogant, quite likable as well.
Well, he's mostly playing himself in films, isn't he? Which kind of,
restrained a bit by a script.
The best film stars kind of do, don't they? Really?
Well, yeah, so, which is no bad thing. And the thing, I must confess, I haven't seen. I've seen bits of the original Arthur over the years, but not all of it.
I've seen the original, and it was okay. But I did find myself agreeing with a few critics. They sort of said, "Well, they're kind of acting like it was this classic film that needs to be remade and." Everyone loves Arthur, but I mean, it was okay, but it was a bit of a flawed comedy from, 30 years ago.
The thing is, I, having not seen the original or not knowing it properly, I think it's relatively faithful to the core idea, namely Arthur being a multimillionaire / billionaire who is also a chronic alcoholic, which I thought, from interviews and trailers and stuff, I thought they kind of left that out and they were going more with the... Sort of exclude the alcoholism, and just that. But the alcohol is a major part of it, and he's drunk almost the entire film. Whether this comes up in Arthur or not, I don't know. But people comment on it being a problem and how he, what the damage it's doing. But not in a serious way, which makes it sound like it's trivialising it, which it arguably could be. But they keep referencing it. But he's sort of a lovable drunk, and so it's fine. And he is. Sort of heir to an enormous fortune, or the Bark Corporation, which his mother runs. Because he's a bit of a loose cannon, investors aren't too sure about him taking over the reins. So his mother wants him to marry sort of a sensible, not even that sensible, but just a more reliable woman who will keep him in check. And he doesn't want to marry this woman, but goes along with it anyway, because otherwise he'll lose all the money.
And that's where Helen Mirren comes in.
Yes.
Yeah. So
the reliable
the love interest.
No, Helen Mirren plays his nanny.
Oh.
Who is still ongoing.
Which was John Gielgud,
who was his butler in the original. But in the meantime, he falls in love, meets and falls in love with a far more normal, impoverished New Yorker, who, I can't remember her name, but I haven't seen her in anything else, but she's extremely well cast in this. She's very believable and normal, down-to-earth, likeable, good comic timing. And so he has to choose, essentially, between normal woman or the money. And... it's this conflict that he's most of the way he's siding with the money, even though he knows that makes him a terrible, weak human being. At its heart, it's a very sweet, likable film, and it is also very funny. I laughed a lot more than I was expecting to, and sort of welled up a bit at the end when things are unfolding, and it's very likable. So I'm saying this almost begrudgingly. I want it to be a terrible remake and they've ruined a classic and Russell Brand's awful. It's really not. He straddles the line very nicely between being sort of over the top, but also knowing that, giving the impression that he's got more to offer, but sort of is uninspired. And Helen Mirren is very good as the nanny. And I want to say Greta Gerwig or Greta
Garbo?
No.
Gina Gershon?
No. Anyway, but the love interest is very good. Jennifer Garner is sort of the other woman who wants to marry, who also is quite evil and does a good impression. So, I really quite liked it.
Okay.
Yeah, as comedies go, it's one of the better ones I've seen.
Will
recently.
They be remaking Arthur 2 on the rocks?
Quite possibly.
Maybe.
Not knowing how the original ends. Because how does the original end?
I think there are some credits.
Oh,
and then it stops.
And then it stops, and you just go home.
Yeah,
fair enough. Yeah. Because there's no obvious opening for a sequel, but if on the rocks is just he loses his fortune due to some event and then has to make do with it, well they cover that to a little bit at the end of this, because of how things transpire. So we'll see. Okay. I doubt they'll probably make another sequel. Yeah. But I just quite liked it. But if you hate Russell Brand, this won't convert you, I think. You should probably still avoid it. But if you're willing to give him a chance, then it's worth a watch.
It seems to be sort of notable for the just really being part of the ongoing ascent of Russell Brand in Hollywood, really.
Yes, I think so.
I don't know if this is the film that he'll be known for, but
probably.
It's keeping
doing
him
well enough
in
for
mind
it.
Of producers, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes, definitely. Mm. And it's a role that I think he suits very well because he needs to be slightly over the top but slightly likable and quite verbose.
I remember I used to gig with Russell Brand before he was famous. Before really? All this, yeah.
Seriously?
Yeah.
I never knew
oh,
that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. We go way back, me and Brandy. Yeah. Me and the Ruster. Yeah.
You often in touch?
No, never. No. Never called him that.
How many did you gig with him much?
I did about four or five gigs with him. I did a TV pilot with him as well called Kings of Comedy. He was hosting. It was like Big Brother, but comedians.
Oh, yes.
We were
I do remember that.
For a week in Bristol. Yes. And Russell Brand. It was one of his first TV things. Mm. And he was hosting it. We'd sort of live in the house for 4 days and be all knackered and hating each other in the way that you're meant to.
Yes.
And then he'd sort of come in all washed and pristine and having had a stylist and go, oh, and now let's meet the contestants and all that sort of, you know, waving his arms around in this flamboyant way. And we all stood there just hating him, thinking, you're being paid for this, aren't you? We're just being trapped in a house for no real reason for the last 5 days.
Let us out.
I know. So,
but no, you're so not bitter. So it's
fair play to them. Fair play to him.
Yes. Well,
as long as the checks keep coming. They haven't yet, but
well,
yeah.
One day. Yes. No, that's all right.
So anyway.
Anyway.
Let's wrap up with some Desert Island Flicks.
Yes.
Best film set in Vermont. Yes, indeed. Yes. How did we leave it this long?
I know. It's such an obvious category. My choice.
Yes.
Would be a film that I remember I lent to you, saying, oh, I've got to watch this, it's brilliant. And you hated it.
Well,
you absolutely hated it.
Depends which one you're talking about.
Which is Super Troopers.
I like Super Troopers.
I thought you said it was awful. Oh, you said it was like Police Academy, but worse.
I did say that, didn't I?
Yeah.
My memory has been kinder to it.
Fair enough.
I saw a bit of it on ITV the other day, and it was all right. I was quite getting nostalgic for it.
No, fair enough. It's a very silly film.
Oh, no, that's a different film.
What are you thinking
of? I'm thinking of. Or you're thinking of. One of us is thinking of a different film.
You're not thinking of
Starship Troopers. I'm thinking of Starship Troopers.
So you like Starship Troopers.
I like Starship Troopers.
Yeah, Starship Troopers isn't set in Vermont.
That's why before the podcast I did ask you, are you sure it's set in Vermont? He said, well it says it's... I mean, our memory is obviously not Wikipedia because that's not involved here.
That was just general sarcasm on my part.
I was generally thinking that Starship Troopers was set in Vermont.
No, they're two very different films.
I don't like Super Troopers.
Yeah, no, I really do like Super Troopers. I think a testament to its likability is the fact that every various aspects of it crop up in internet-based memes every so often. Which means that even if... Okay, it may not be to everyone's taste, but there is a hardcore group of people who do really quite like it. And I'm one of them.
Oh, dear.
It's a very silly film. But it is... And it's the... I can't remember the name of the group. Broken Lizard or something Lizard?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's... Because I've got another one of their films, which is kind of a spoof slasher movie. And I think they've done other, like Oktoberfest or Beer Fair. They've done a few others, but this is far and away the best one. So they need. I think they're working on a sequel, actually. But yeah, so this is the one to watch, unless you're Paul and think it's Starship Troopers.
Watch Starship Troopers. It's not set in Vermont, but don't hold that against it. As for my favourite film set in Vermont, well, I mean, obviously, just off the top of my head, purely, there's so many to choose from. You know, you've got Baby Boom, Dark Victory, Funny Farm. Yeah, Man with a Plan, you know.
It's good that you can just do it in alphabetical order off the top of it as well. It's a gift.
Equally not. I can do it in reverse alphabetical order. You know, White Christmas, obviously, Where the Rivers Flow North, What Lies Beneath.
Yeah, you're just showing off now.
I'm just showing off now. Yeah. That's just the W's.
What Lies Beneath was terrible.
It's not a great
Mainly thing, because of the... I'm sure I rant about this. The trailer gave away the ending.
Oh, it did, didn't it?
Yeah. It's basically a murder mystery. It's a ghost story. And then at the very end... Then the whole thing is to build up, why is this girl haunting you? And then you find out why. But in the trailer, turns out this bloke did it. And so the whole way through, you say, I know this, so you're just boring me for an hour and a half.
So not that one.
No, not that one.
I was going to say White Christmas, because I've seen that. It's a good film. But Holiday Inn is the original from White Christmas, of course. White Christmas is the sequel.
Right.
So good as it is, I'm going to go for Dead Poets Society.
No,
That is a classic... Is it
true? I feel it's sort of been,
you know,
as time has gone on, it's been mocked to a degree.
Well, it has.
But.
Rightly
I think,
so.
A little bit. But at the time, I remember liking it a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was very much of its time.
I saw Shadowlands on last night for the first time, a C.S. Lewis-based film. Yeah. Well, I found interesting. I recorded off the TV ages ago, and so there are adverts here to fast forward. And between it was on ITV3, which is, for those overseas listeners, is kind of, they show classic dramas and classic films. Yeah. And so Shadowland's been quite a sort of high...
Sort of your highbrow, old-fashioned period drama.
And between pretty much every, in every commercial break, they were trailing a mystery series, which is on ITV over here, called Lewis, which is a spin-off of Inspector Morse.
Yes.
So which really kind of made you feel like they're sort of saying, if you're enjoying watching Shadowlands, if you like films set in Oxford starring someone called Lewis, why not watch Lewis, which is also set in Oxford and also has someone called Lewis in it? Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, why not?
Well, they know their audience. Oh, look, again, another tangent. But before Fast Five years, they had, the usual few adverts, few trailers, fair enough. And then just before the film started, they said, all right, and now as a special, not quite a special treat, but now a special preview of the film Bridesmaids coming out later this year. And it wasn't a trailer. It was kind of a complete five-plus-minute scene. Mm. Oh, and Bridesmaids, it's kind of being pitched as a female Hangover. And the trailer looks quite good, and it's meant to be quite good. Mm. But when you think, as you're watching, you think, hey, trailers are over, ready for cars and explosions and gunfights. And then, right now, Bridesmaids for 5 minutes. It's just the middle of the film.
Okay.
Just in a sort of going wedding dress shopping with food poisoning. It's like, okay, so we're just watching this now. We don't know these characters. Yeah. We don't really know what's you can sort of, it's self-explanatory really that they're bridal shopping with food poisoning. But still, it's like it's wrong audience.
Yeah, totally.
Wrong time. It's a really weird way of doing it. Just show the trailer.
Yeah.
Make an extended trailer, but don't just drop you in the middle of a film. It's 5 minutes before the car explodes.
Very odd.
Right.
Very odd.
Very strange indeed.
Odd choice.
So filmmakers, don't do that.
Take note.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I think it's an awesome.
Well, that'll do us.
We're done.
Yes, indeed. So, any thoughts, then keep them to yourselves, really. We're not interested.
No,
we
don't, no.
Oh, but if you really can't wait to get it out of your head, then podcast@moviebanter.co.uk.
Yes.
Or on Twitter.
Or tweet us @moviebanter. Or on Facebook. Yes. Facebook.com/moviebanter.
Yeah, all of those.
Basically, just hit moviebanter, throw moviebanter into anything you can think of, and there's something to do with us in
Jeeves
there.
Ask Jeeves.
Alta Vista.
Yeah.
Wow. Hey, kids.
Down with the kids. CFAX. We're on page...
oh, dear.
341. Right. We'll see you another time.
P.O. Box 17. Yes, we'll see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.